SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com on the stream. And it is that watershed morning, 11:30, Breeders' Cup pre-entries, and then the work starts, the real work. Then going to be fun. I think I'm as excited as ever for the trip out to California. Leave Saturday and made most of the arrangements. I've got a couple little things to take care of, and we'll be good. Have to go to Bennington for a haircut. Although I did find a really good was it last year, right in Monrovia. I needed a haircut when I was traveling like a maniac, and I needed an emergency cut. And I found I'm going to forget the place. It's also where I've had shoes repaired right in the village there, Monrovia. Like I should really write all these down. And I do owe some people have written who are going to be at Breeders' Cup and are looking for dining suggestions. And so we'll get some of those out to everybody as well. And speaking of coming to the Arcadia area, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I happened to see Jim Gagliano at Far Hills, and I asked him when he was going out. He said, "I got to go out early. We've got the owners' conference, and you know, this has become a very successful and a terrific introduction to owning horses and building a program, building a team, and." Virtually everything's covered, and there's still time if you haven't gone to the website and take a look. If you're going to be out fairly early to Southern California, or if you're in the area, ownerview.com. And you know, when they first started this, it's got to be about 5 years, I'd say, at least. Might even be a little bit more, but I'll send out a link to it as well. A terrific way to get introduced. It'll be a panel discussions and meet and greets and everything you could possibly want if you go to the website, ownerview.com, and starts on Monday through Wednesday, and it'll keep you busy until the final draw for the fields when you can knuckle down and handicap. I'm going to have to knuckle down and handicap and make some decisions actually by this afternoon late. We'll talk to Jeremy Plonk and also John White. And I got to send Jeremy probably by about 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, I give or take. I've got to come up with the Express Bet Breeders' Cup wagering guide entry for the Classic. So I've got to figure out at least one decision for the Breeders' Cup. Also anxious today, they'll announce the race order. And I was kind of estimating field sizes and trying to work backwards, obviously, from the Classic. And the turf has been reestablished. There was those couple of years where the mile had jumped up and when the mile was kind of the focus race, but the turf has been reestablished as the penultimate Breeders' Cup race. The distaff re-established as well, taken off of the, you know, the Friday card and some of the experimentation that went on really the distaff belonged on Saturday. The juvenile showcase idea is okay. It works. Even though, you know, the juvenile main track races, you know, they're important, obviously. But the juvenile showcase works as a concept for Friday. If you keep going backwards, classic, turf, distaff, mile probably before the distaff, you would think. Then back to the dirt. The sprint is going to be as heralded and as anticipated, really, as anything. So yeah, from that point, Philly and Mare turf or the turf sprint, one or the other. I would imagine the dirt mile would be the first, I guess. Yeah, probably be, yeah. So some, that early pick four, some tinkering in there, some version. So we'll get all that by early this afternoon. You'll have plenty of ammunition to start conceiving of how you're going to approach the 2 days. And we'll start really dissecting things, obviously, after that, once we really get a handle. And a lot of the decisions in terms of where horses were leaning, bricks and mortar is going to run in the turf, but they'll probably cross enter. The one of the ones that's interesting actually is what Iridesa is going to do. Joseph O'Brien, the mile or the filly and mare. We did get, you may have seen some reporting from abroad and from the International Racing Bureau, the IRB. They laid out, talked to Aidan O'Brien and got his final, seemingly his, a lot of his final decisions and who's coming and who's not. Anthony Van Dyke, we knew, obviously, and Magical coming out of the Champions Day. In addition, for Aidan O'Brien, you've got Circus Maximus confirmed for the mile. And he also talked about the second. He did confirm that Fleeting, who had a bad trip, did not have the easiest of trips on Saturday. We'll talk to Pete Fornatel, actually, in about 10 minutes, and Pete will talk about his experience at Champions Day. I know he was rooting one master home, but fell short there. So we'll talk to Pete. But Fleeting may be a little dirtied up. In addition, O'Brien confirmed what Nicole Russo told you last week, Fairyland in the turf sprint, and the other Coolmore participants, only one in the juvenile filly turf. That'll be Tango. And all three of the boys, I didn't get the Arizona's clearly coming, it seems. Wichita and Royal Dornick under consideration. And so one, the other, or both. And none for the, in fact, Andy Serling and I were talking last night, and it, very interesting that it only looks like Simon Crisford will contest, you know, from the international set. It only seems like Crisford with the two that he's got, Ali and Al Rea. So, you know, a category that you would think they would relish, but I think there's one other. There was one other odd name. Band practice, is that the one? Yeah, maybe. So maybe one other. So there's your Ballydoyle invasion. And medium-sized contingent. some of the news that we also got, of course, as the morning unfolded, you know, we got that addition to the turf by Jack Sisterson with Bandua. Jack pulling a little little three-card Monty. Because, yeah, it's like follow the queen, because Bandua, I hadn't even seen Bandua being considered. And all of a sudden, no Flapjack, no Lexingtonian. But there's here's Bandua. What's so crazy? Why not? The same thing with Mike Maker and Zulu Alpha. Why not? The smallish field in the turf, looks like nine, maybe a tenth. Bricks and mortar, Old Persian, Channel Maker, Anthony Van Dyke, Arklo, Acclimate, Bandua, Zulu Alpha. Channel Cat and United are will be interested to see if either or both. Gotta be getting excited, right? Everybody keyed up. We I've got a fun morning. I've got Jonathan Thomas. We're gonna talk to Jonathan about the roller coaster week that he had. Catholic boy retires, and literally within hours, a new stake horse in the barn. Zenobia wins the Athenia on Sunday. And Jonathan's got another reason, actually, to talk to him. He's got a two-year-old that caught my eye. There is some very good two-year-old racing today and tomorrow off the turf. Unfortunately, it rained here all night. I don't know if it rained all night downstate, but all night up here. And so races 4, 7, and 8 are off the turf today. There is a really good maiden race that today and tomorrow, the fifth race both today and tomorrow, 6 furlongs today for the boys. And you've got the return of Bella Via for LaPenta and Human and Todd Pletcher. This is the Honor Code colt that was second to Tumbling Sky at Saratoga. And Jenna Antonucci had brought Bella Via to Saratoga. And now with Todd, gets first Lasix today. Our friend Lee Einsiedler's got Secret Rules coming back out of the Governor Morris race. Brad Cox with 16 tons, the Bodie Meister. You've got the $1.2 million Larry Best, Snapchap, the Into Mischief, Keeneland last year. Very nice. Jane Lyons with Moon Over Miami, the Malibu Moon. This is a pretty heady bunch. Goes as the fifth race, 6 on the main. In fact, at some point, you know what? When Sid joins us, I'll mention that Bella Via, because he's out of Glacken's Gal, who, of course, got the dam of Matoli. And Matoli's sibling yesterday, after Matoli had lit up the work tab. Did you watch that? Did you watch that workout? Dennis O'Neill, $110,000 for the Oxbow sibling yesterday. Yeah. And, of course, Glacken's Gal, the second dam of Matoli, and this yearling colt. Tomorrow you've got the $2 million filly. Not filly. The $2 million... The $2 million New York bred. Chestertown for the Bromans, that the Bromans bred and West Point bought. Debuts tomorrow. And that's a good race. Lots to talk about. Pete Fornatel starts us off. Jonathan Thomas, Sid, much, much more.
the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races.
Little Nation.
Pete Fornatale back from British Champions Day. And, you know, you go over there much more, Pete, you're gonna come back with an accent.
That happened to my daughter, by the way. She was 2 years old for those 4 months we lived there. And
oh, yeah.
She came back and I swear she sounded like Peppa Pig. It was, you know, mummy. But it's yet to happen to me.
I love it. Well, it's been a good week for, you know, my theory is the more accents you put on a show, the better the show will be. And yesterday, Nicky Henderson and Nick Luck on Monday. So if you want to, I don't know, put on a Brooklyn accent or some affectation, go ahead.
You're stuck with my regular New York. You know, I don't pronounce every R, but, you know, most of them, it's pretty straight on down the line.
I love it. Well, you know, the ramifications are starting to become very clear as to what went on British Champions Day. Talk about your experience. You looked just gleeful there, and you know, certainly
you know, certainly has become a real standard on the calendar, and it really hasn't inhibited. There was a lot of concern that it would inhibit when it was first created, that it would take away from potential Breeders' Cup runners, but you know what? It really hasn't.
No, to this point, it has not, and I think we're going to see that again this year with Magical planning on making the trip over, and I'm such a big fan of hers, and I think, you know, by dint of having to knock heads with Enable so many times, people don't appreciate how impressive she is, and very atypical, too, for an O'Brien runner in that, yes, he's had these fillies and mares before who've had longish campaigns and done this sort of warrior routine in the fall of running the three races in the span of a little more than a month. But for Magical, it's all the more impressive because of how early she got her season started and the fact that she's still going. And let me tell you, she looked gorgeous the other day in the flesh. And it was no surprise to me. I mean, I think she basically ran to her form, and that was good enough to beat the group assembled against her. Certainly can't blame them for not wanting to wheel Enable back that quickly, especially on the type of ground it was. I thought in the end it was a fantastic win by her, show her quality, and of course a form boost for Enable as well. So I'm very excited to see. Sounded like the original plan was filly and mare turf. I think they may end up spinning that and going to the turf with her and just having two chances in the turf with her and Anthony Van Dyke. That's just me guessing, though. We'll see what happens, but I think it's great to have her little bit of extra star power as a return, a horse put in a winning effort in the turf last year coming back. I think it's great in flat racing when we get to see these champion-level fillies and colts come back and contest more than one Breeders' Cup. I think it adds to the feel of the Breeders' Cup, not just as a betting venture, but as a sporting one. And O'Brien certainly supported the event tremendously over the years, and I expect when we see these pre-entries in a couple of hours, that will be the case once again.
Well, and his lean actually is to run her against Sister Charlie and create a nice marquee headline battle in the filly and mare turf, and Fleeting as well is going to contest it.
Fleeting, I'm very interested in also. Now, this
bad
is
trip.
One where we should, exactly, off that trip. And I feel like it's interesting because I wonder if a longer distance wouldn't be better for her. We'll have to see what they end up doing. I did hear that report that he was thinking about the Sister Charlie clash and the filly and mare. I figure, though, when they look at the pre-entries, I'm assuming they'll be cross-entering. And when they look at the pre-entries and the money difference and the field difference, I think it might make more sense to run in the turf, but we'll see. I'm not going to tell Aiden O'Brien what to do. Guy certainly knows a lot more than me about this stuff, and especially the horses in his yard. So we'll have to see what they do. But Fleeting is interesting. I don't think we saw the best of her at Arlington, and I think she was going to go close, if not win, the other day without having the door absolutely slammed on her. And obviously she re-rallied anyway and was coming again at the line. So those are two of the O'Briens that I'm going to be most interested in, I think, come Breeders' Cup Day.
Talk about the rest of the experience and the rest of the day. I know that your horse fell just a little short, One Master.
Yeah, I'm a big One Master fan, and I thought the conditions were going to be to suit, especially there was a very strong headwind. So I was thinking that her held up, but it was one of those. It was sort of a race that was falling apart late, and the one who moved last got the job done. But One Master did nothing to discredit herself in that race, and the day as a whole was just fabulous. I mean, the race of the day for me was that Gold Cup, and it's funny that that was the race I was on Sky for, and of course I had to make the obligatory joke about them having the American on to talk about the Stayers race. But in truth, it's been a very easy division to follow the last few years with horses like Stradivarius and Kew Gardens, and it was so fun watching those two throw down in the stretch. And Stradivarius ran great, did everything but win. I think Kew Gardens just had a little bit of a better trip on the day and was able to get the job done. But the most exciting thing about those two is this has the potential to turn into a real cup rivalry that we'll see again and again, you know, maybe three times next year if everything holds and goes according to plan. So I'm really excited to see what those two come back and do as four-year-olds in 2020. It's going to be it's going to be fun to see and fun to follow, and hopefully we'll get a nice showdown at Ascot at least a couple more times between those two.
Well, and it's funny because Nick Luck, you know, when I brought the race up, we were going through the results, and he said it's one of the best, if not the best, flat season race of the year for him.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's hard in a year where we had that that incredible Enable Crystal Ocean showdown. It's hard to give anything the nod over that for me. But I mean, this is right up there. And the fact that over such a long distance, you can have two horses separated by a nose, both getting down their bellies and running through the lane and putting in winning efforts. It's really, those two stretch drives really for me are what racing's all about. It's great to be able to see them contested, especially by star, these level of stars who we've just had such an ability to see and get connected with over the past couple of seasons. It really was a mind-blowingly race. Rooting down the stretch. I mean, from my perspective, I was up in the after races box, and it looked like Stradivarius had the measure, and Kew Gardens just kept fighting and fighting. It was fantastic.
Yeah, enjoyable morning. We were on our way. We were driving down to Far Hills, and we didn't go. Sometimes we go down Friday night, and so Tina continues to be concerned about my driving. Although, frankly, even before the eye issue, she was never all that. happy with my driving. However, so she was driving and I was doing some, you know, some final write up and watching the races at the car. And, you know, it's always fun. All these, you know, all these opportunities, whether it's Dubai, you know, anything internationally, when you get, you know, the early morning racing, as a prequel to the afternoon, whatever you're doing, it makes for a, you know, for a fun day. And this obviously, you know, we'll see where things go. There was some other news actually that trickled out too, from, you know, the end of, flat racing in Europe. You bring up Enable, Baltgeist not coming. And even though he's under light training at, Andre Favre's yard, It appears that he's retiring, and they're trying to finalize a stud deal for Baltgeist. So,
oh, that's too bad. I was hoping we might get to see him on the race course one or two more times, but I guess I can't blame him for going out on a high note. I mean, here's a horse who had been very unlucky and had some really had. I wasn't clever enough to come up with him in the arc, so don't misinterpret what I'm about to say. But he was a horse, especially going back and looking at some of the form, had that big Group 1 race in it. I figure they got it. They got the one that they would have picked, and maybe they've decided that's enough for him. And I'm sure he'll be an interesting prospect to follow as he moves on to his next career. You talked about watching the UK racing in the morning before Far Hills. I had the opposite experience. I went from Champions Day back to the place where I was staying, and fortunately, Sky Sports Racing had the Far Hills meet, so we were able to sit there and get our Thai takeaway and have a bottle of wine and watch all the action from Belmont and Keeneland and Far Hills, and it was fun. I've obviously had the pleasure of being a guest on that show many times, but it was super fun to sit there and just get to watch and bet through the evening. It's a cool thing about the internationalization of racing that we just get to extend the day and all the betting opportunities and storylines to follow that go along with that. Whether you're starting early or staying up late, racing these days is a really fun international game, and certainly got to experience that at Ascot. It's there's nothing like the meeting, but Champions Day is really fun too. Something that I think Americans would enjoy. I mean, if you could only go to one, I'd say, you know, try to hit a Tuesday at the Royal meeting. But if you're going to be anywhere in the area, or you're thinking of a fun racing trip that isn't the Royal meeting to Ascot, Champions Day is well worth checking out. Really, just a tremendous day of racing. Had a ton of fun over there.
Turning our attention to Breeders' Cup, and Pete, lay out the agenda and the In the Money podcast approach, what you're going to be doing, and then we'll talk a little broad strokes for Cup.
Well, things are kicking off this week. We are recording Breeders' Cup Monster Podcast. So that's going to mean one guest for each Breeders' Cup race. Those should be going up on Friday. Those will obviously be done off the pre-entries. And then come Monday, when we have the draw and the PPs, we're going to be drilling down a little bit more. We've got a webinar with Stats Race Lens. I'm going to be sending around a link for that. Folks can join in. Matt Vagvolgi and Scott Coles from the NHC will be participating, as will JK and I, going over some of our favorite Stats Race Lens angles. For that show, we're going to be doing the fully drawn pick six on Saturday. And then later in the week, we're going to have our traditional final answer podcast. Not sure if that's going to be me and JK or if we're going to have our usual, one of our usual suspects on there to give our final answers for the Breeders' Cup. And through the week, JK and I are both going to be doing some fun video stuff for Breeders' Cup that's going to be dropped into their broadcast in the morning with the workouts, and might be recording, as news develops, might be doing some very short podcasts just on all the latest news from the course. So there's going to be a ton of fun stuff to follow. You have, if you're subscribed to the In the Money Players podcast feed, you'll get all of it. I'll be tweeting all about it, too, from the account @loomsboldly on Twitter. Really looking forward to a fun and busy Breeders' Cup season. I fly out there on Saturday, and I'll be doing some writing, too. I'm going to be working for At the Races, doing a daily diary from on site from Saturday. So hopefully we'll pick up some tidbits, whether it's at the barns on the backstretch or hanging out in the breakfast marquee or wherever else around Santa Anita, but should be hopefully a ton of good content for me. And I don't know about you, Steve, but I mean, for me, it's one of the busiest weeks of the year, but it's also one of the most fun. And I look forward to it every year and very excited to be headed back to the Breeders' Cup for, I think, now my fifth in a row, which is good. I was in a long string of not getting to be there every year. And I love the fact that I'm back in the mix and I can't wait to get out to Santa Anita.
Well, the difficulty, the challenge that has emerged, you know, with the expansion, the last 10 years, wasn't overly taxing when they added, you know, the Philly and Mare turf, but then in 2007 at Monmouth, when we got the Philly and Mare sprint, we got the juvenile races, first one juvenile, and then they expanded it. The challenge, and I talk about it every year, is how, you know, for the longest time in the event, we virtually went into it knowing something about every single horse that was running. And, you know, you literally could look at a field and you had a sense about everybody that was in every race. The volume of races, the 14 races, and frankly, because there's supporting, you know, there's an expanded supporting card on Friday, and those stakes have really, you know, kind of grown and morphed into something. There's so many horses that you really don't know all you would like to, no matter how efficient you are at watching replays and combing through PPs. There's going to be a particularly the juveniles, some of the juvenile turf events, the turf sprint to some degree. You know, there's always these horses that you just don't know. Mongolian Saturday, I think, if we wanted to pull out a name in recent years, was a horse that kind of, you know, you looked at the PPs, Pete, and you know, you kind of thought, okay, is he a contender? What is he? And you know, the answer for me was no, not really. But it's gotten harder to be as on top of everybody involved.
I think that's right, and I'll tell you, Steve, it's one thing where I feel like we're able to provide a service with audio content and guests. My inclination in those situations is to pick the races. I mean, obviously, for me, doing the shows, I'm going to be doing the deep dive everywhere. But if you're not like us and this isn't what you do for your work, I don't think it's nuts to take an approach where you say, hey, these are the races I'm going to dig particularly deep into, and then, hey, maybe these are the races where I'm going to do the 75-80% job, and I'm going to listen to At the Races or check out the In the Money Players podcast and see if I can get a couple of other ideas. And, of course, you're going to want to allocate your betting dollar accordingly, presumably betting much more so on the races you have the time to dive deeper into. But it does leave a real room for us to provide a service and hopefully shine a light on the Mongolian grooms of the world and other horses that, I mean, that's a perfect example for me of a horse that I was not going to come up with on my own, but I ended up including in some savory combination because of something I heard from a Confederate, gambling Confederate, or on a show I honestly don't even remember now. But I do remember that was a horse that hearing somebody else talk about made me take a second look. And it's not like I keyed the horse or anything, but I was able to not get knocked down. And, you know, hopefully that's something, you know, I know I'm going to be desperately finding the time to go back into the SteveBick.com archives and listen to the content you're going to be putting out between now and then. With as busy as I am, Steve, I may have to listen to it on 2x speed. You may end up sounding like a chipmunk or Martin Scorsese circa 1975. But, you know, that's it's a small price to pay to get all the content you'll be laying down over the next, how many days is it now? Is it 10 days or so until we get to the Breeders' Cup?
Well, we've got, it's actually, yeah, 5, and we'll have the fields this afternoon. A little bit, you know, we'll listen in on later on to the draw. I always think that they're going to rifle through and get it done in a half an hour, but it's always an hour.
I wish.
Yeah, between 11:30 and 12:30, and it's available all over the place. You can get it on the Breeders' Cup website. NBC is streaming. I think TVG is running it live. So plenty of, you know, if you want to just kind of watch. And then, of course, through the magic of Twitter, you will see graphics of, you know, 14 graphics with the fields from probably 77 different outlets. So you can look forward to that. You know, going in, Pete, some broad themes. You know, what I asked each of the DRF correspondents over the last week. We're still waiting on Steve Anderson. Has been elusive to get the last couple of thoughts from him on the juvenile filly turf and the turf. And then we'll be complete. But and at the end, I asked each of them, you know, what beside the race you're covering are you looking forward to the most? And you know, I'll ask you the same thing.
Well, from a sporting point of view, if that magical Sister Charlie race does appear, from a sporting point of view, I'm not sure anything is going to eclipse that. I'm super excited about the juvenile. I like a lot of these horses. I love the Maxfield narrative. Very interested to see how he ends up shaping up against the likes of Eight Rings and Dennis's Moment. I think it's potentially that's a really good race. From a betting point of view, I'm excited about the Classic. And I did make a wager when I was over in the UK. I think it's a very open race. There was some 33-1 about Seeking the Soul. And, of course, you can take that each way. Meaning I'd have, you know, 6 or 7 to 1 on him just to hit the board. I thought that value was too good to pass up. Obviously, there's plenty of other contenders in the race, but it just feels like a year. I mean, I certainly get the McKinsey love. I've seen how impressive he is on his best. I've been doing those rankings for Breeders' Cup all year, and I think, I'm not sure there's been one week where I haven't had McKinsey as my number one ranked contender for the race. But at the prices, I have, and especially a price like 33-1 on a horse like Seeking the Soul, no problem taking a little bit of a shot again. So that's the only bet I have so far. But there is an awful lot to choose from in terms of preferred places to get involved at this year's Breeders' Cup, and it's only going to get more so a little bit later today when we can see the early composition of these fields vis-a-vis the pre-entries. But those are a few that leap to mind at first asking.
What's been your favorite Breeders' Cup memory over the years?
Oh wow, that's such a good one. First thing that popped to mind was honestly Enable last year. I got goosebumps watching her before, during, and after, and I had a great view from those media seats at Churchill Downs. So you're probably, I don't know what you are, maybe a furlong and a half from the wire. So really getting to see that race develop. There's so much to choose from, but that one is so fresh in my mind that it really it felt like watching greatness in a way that that really stuck with me. I did not see either of the Zenyatta ones live. I would imagine seeing either of those runs live would have been an otherworldly experience as a racing fan. But when I'm thinking of memories, I got to go with the visceral, actually being there in the stands and watching with my eyes, and Enable takes the case for me. I'll throw that one back at you, though. What's your sort of most visceral, exciting memory of watching a Breeders' Cup race?
You know, that's also a fabulous question, because what's funny about the Breeders' Cup is you have to parse out the wagering experiences,
yeah,
and from the historic race moments, and you know, from a wagering standpoint, the year at Churchill, we had just an incredible run at Churchill in. Was that 2000 and, oh my God, 2000 and, which one was it? 2000 and.
Was it Zenyatta getting beat by Blaine?
No, early, 2000. 2000, okay. Right?
Oh,
2000.
Way back.
Yeah, Kona Gold and Caressing and Spain and just ridiculous. My man Barbecue Bill, it was very close to Bill Perry, and so we bet Northeast Bound, and you know, even though he took the most excruciating beat by War Chant, we still cleaned up. From a betting standpoint, it was an insane day. But for moments, you know what? We'll go back to Churchill. The Blaine Zenyatta finish. Remains tough to beat. I mean, for drama, and you know, I'm sure the Zenyatta fans will cringe, but it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
And I mean, to me, I am an unabashed Zenyatta fan, and obviously, it's painful on one level. But I mean, it's still. I mean, how could you not still think of it? I still feel like she proved enough that day that it's not just a. It's not just some sad memory. It's not like she was a distant eighth. You know what I mean? She did everything but win with excuses. So, I mean, hey, I don't think they should. I think you can, as a Zenyatta Mafia member, you can look back at that, and I still think you can hold your head high. Another one I should have mentioned, the Songbird Beholder finish was just incredible. And I can remember that race. You sort of knew before. At least we did. JK and I were watching that together. We were with a group of folks, and we anticipated that being a great moment in Breeders' Cup history, not knowing exactly how it was going to play out. But I can remember him, you know, we were talking about our bets, and we got everything in, and I remember him specifically saying, like, guys, just for a second, let's just, like, appreciate how, like, incredibly awesome this is. That was our attitude going in. We walked out, we watched it live, and it was just thrilling. What happened? I don't think it ended up being it wasn't an unmitigated success from a wagering point of view. I think in the end I needed Songbird more, but it was just such a great sporting moment. And I just, what I love about the Breeders' Cup, just providing all these opportunities for these championship moments. Oh, you know what? The Farrow running down the stretch of Keeneland. That was awesome. It was so nice. You know, I was a big fan of his, and it was nice to see him put together a performance that there were little things to crab about the figures and different things in his races along the way. And to see him go out with a Tour de Force performance and, you know, erase the taste of the Saratoga defeat, that was really cool, too. That's another one that I remember making an effort. A lot of times, I love looking at the horses before, but a lot of times I'll watch the race on TV. But those are three moments where, even before the race, it was like, no, this one I want to watch, you know, with my eyes and with the binoculars. And that one was particularly funny because we were in the green room at Keeneland, and we walked outside the green room, and Travis Stone was in our group that day. And Travis had his high-powered bins, And, you know, once a race caller, always a race caller. He couldn't help himself. He started, like, half calling the race. So we have our own private race call with Travis Stone bringing home the para at Keeneland in 2015. Just as a, put the sporting thing aside, just as a memory that tickles me of the Breeders' Cup, I don't know if I can get any better than that one, Steve.
Yeah, I'll give you one more, too, that comes to mind. And actually, I was going to say Midnight Lute's second win, his career finale, you know, after having an abbreviated campaign and, you know, being he didn't even go favored that day. Street Boss was the favorite. And yet, you know, he wins. And also at Monmouth in that slop. Where I could just remember him storming home, and you know, you're thinking this might not be the right trip, it might not be the right surface for him, you know, given his size and everything. But boy, his wins both I would say were pretty special to witness. There's a few, you know, the sprint overall, I'm an unabashed sprint fan. Safe. How about, I'll give you a crazy one from one of the toughest days in Breeders' Cup history. What about Desjure jumping the shadow?
I am so glad you mentioned that, Steve.
Safely
kept. You'll never believe it. You'll never believe it, but I watched Magical in the paddock and ask it with Willie Carson. And he, upon hearing I was from America, just got the most, I mean, he's a very nice man. This was in jest, but got the most sour look on his face. And, you know, about talking about American, I had to needle. And I said, oh, you didn't, Willie, you didn't enjoy your time in the States. And he looked at me and he says, flipping shadows. Only he didn't say flipping, as you might imagine. And I know we tend to cuss on here, but it's too off-brand for me. But
that's great.
He was still a little bitter. But then he the ice was broken, and he went on to talk about riding in the States. And he had a very fond memory of Angel Cordero. This must have been I'm guessing this was around a Breeders' Cup, but a number of the jockeys led by Angel showing up at Studio 54, to give you an idea of what year this must have been. And the limo door opening and then seeing Angel and the velvet rope and the crowd parting like the Red Sea as all the jocks went into Studio 54.
That's great. I love it.
But Willie was cool, and he is still bitter about the shadow jumping. So what a great performance that was. I mean, that was a little before my hardcore time in the game, so I didn't get to fully experience that, but I did tell him, and knowing it might only make him a little more salty on the subject, but I did declare it one of the great moments in Breeders' Cup history that still gets talked about to this day. And sure enough, without even me bringing it up, it came up today. I love it.
Pretty cool. Well, you know, we didn't even get the personal incident either. That's one of
my favorite videos. Before my time, but I had an early in my fandom, I acquired a VCR tape of the to then great moments in Breeders' Cup history. And I watched, this is how green I was, Steve. I watched that race not knowing what happened. So I kind of got to experience
That's great.
It, years after, a few years after the fact. But yeah, oh my God, how great was she?
Well, it's the greatest unscripted drama in sports. Although last night you had some pretty good unscripted drama for those of you that are Nationals fans. That was actually Juan Soto. that was quite something. So we'll be following what goes on from that point. Pete, I'll see you out there Sunday. I go out Saturday as well. And
awesome.
Safe travels.
Yeah, let's try to get together. If you're hard up for a guest at any time, I can recruit some of the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge gang. Of course, that's one of the biggest contests of the year. People will be, even though you can play online now, people will be coming in from all over the country. It'll be fun if we can put together a little crew and talk a little BCBC, talk a little Breeders' Cup, and just always a pleasure, Steve. Anything I can do to help while out there, make sure to holler at me.
Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly, and the In the Money Player podcast with lots of terrific content that is going to help you get ready for Breeders' Cup. We're going to stay here. We got quite a bit to do, and I don't want to fall behind. Jonathan Thomas is going to join us next, and lots to talk about with Jonathan, given the retirement of Catholic Boy at the same time. As bittersweet as that is, when you have a horse like Catholic Boy retire minutes later. I mean, literally within a couple of days, here comes a new stake horse, Zenobia, and he's got a baby that I want to ask him about running tomorrow. I told you a little bit ago about that pair of maiden races at, there's actually more than just the pair at Belmont today and tomorrow, but he's got one for our friend John Fielding and Fred Hertrick, and of course they're homebreds. You've seen them you've seen them do all kinds of tremendous things. Pythagorean is a first time starter tomorrow in that eighth race, did not draw great out in the 10 hole, gets Manny Franco. So we'll ask about Pythagorean as well with Jonathan, and we'll get his, I don't want to say final thoughts, because Catholic Boy, you know, other than leaving the barn, he'll be around. And I'm sure that Jonathan already probably looking forward to having an opportunity to train the sons and daughters. While we wait for Jonathan, let me get to the Belmont Empire Showcase action from Saturday. And as always, as we discussed with Dave Grenig, it's always an interesting mixed bag. Started out with the two-year-olds and Critical Value for Maya, and for 10 Strike, Marshall Graham and company. And what was interesting was, you know, Marshall went into the day, I'm sure, you know, hoping for the best for Dot Matrix and Critical Value. And Dot Matrix did not run great, but Critical Value did, and took over and drew off under Junior Alvarado. And this is a homebred for Marshall and for Clay, Clay Sanders, his partner. So congratulations to them. That got things going. Then later, the smallish group in the Mohawk Gucci Factor. Again, not a favorite. Second choice, Gucci Factor for Christophe Clement and Castleton Lions, the Gio Ponti six-year-old. And, of course, the whole New York bred, as Dave Grenig referenced, that, you know, long-standing rivalries that had existed in this division over the years, that has now given away, you know, Carafa and company. And now you got some new faces. Voodoo Song, actually, a good second in here as the favorite. And this was one of the day's best. Rosario gets up. Mr. Buff, and there's a really nice piece about the Bromans in, I think it was in Bloodhorse that I see this morning or last night. Son of friend or foe, Mr. Buff, the five-year-old, and prevails. And Pat on the Back kind of just ran evenly in this spot for Harold Lerner and for Maya. Really not at 4-5. Mr. Buff at 3-2. With Alvarado, and was really in control all the way around. Build to Suit gets a chance against Friends and the five-year-old for Seth Klarman and Bill Lawrence. Chad Brown and Manny Franco was a winning favorite. That was in the Hudson. Pause for the Cause in the Iroquois under Jose Ortiz. This Kieran and the Bromans. I mean, what a nice day it is for them. And, of course, they've got the $2 million baby tomorrow. But Pause for the Cause And the Giants Causeway, Philly, the four-year-old wins the Iroquois. One of the prices on the day in the Sleepy Hollow, that Captain Bombastic that we mentioned for Jay Hanley and company. And this also was a Broman bred 40 tails colt out of a cat thief mare, and wins by a nose over Cleon Jones for Al Gold, and 55, of course, at 4-5, 55 dominates, and you know, wins. Castellano rode him like a, you know, like a 2-5 shot is supposed to be ridden, and the Get Stormy mare wins for Chad and Peter Brandt, and the Empire Distaff was a thriller, and I picked that Supernova for Charlie Baker, who really looked like she was moving forward. Four-year-old, and in Charlie's hands, not to say that Lauren Lynn did a bad job by any means, but this filly looked a little progressive, and ran a great race and just fell short, 20-1, and Ratajkowski, M. Ratajkowski has had more horses named after her than anybody. Winner for Brian Lynch and Gary Broad. So there was your rundown for the very nice day of Empire Breds, the Empire Showcase. We debuted Voltarine. She got absolutely slaughtered coming out of the gate, either side of her. Dancing Nikki inside, and Data Analytics just smushed her. And she recovered nicely and came running and came out of it good. So excited. We'll run her at Aqueduct next month. Jonathan Thomas. In fact, Jonathan, I'm sorry. You were listening in, and I didn't realize it. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. What a roller coaster week for you last week. Catholic boy off to stand as a stallion, and at the same time, excited about bringing a new stake runner into the fold, and Zenobia with the win in the Athena. Talk about the week.
I mean, listen, it's the ebb and flow of horse racing, and it's what we do. But, we're really proud of what Catholic Boy accomplished. We feel he's, a rare horse with his versatility, and, he's bringing a whole new set of genetics to the table. It's been a while since Son of More Than Ready's gone off to stud like him. So we're really excited about his future, and, we're really proud as a team that, we got him into a stall at Claiborne, which, is basically, it's kind of rarefied air, so we're all proud of that.
Do we know, did they announce yet what famous stall he's gonna reside?
I don't know which stall, but I wouldn't think that too many bones have occupied those stalls, but
well, they have the placards. They've got the brass plates that record the history of the stallions in each of the in each of the stalls in the stallion barn. Well, as you say, the versatility was just so much fun, and we sort of never knew. And when you and I talked about him so many times, you kind of didn't know where he was going to turn up. And at the same time, he was a horse that you really had to manage carefully.
Well, I think, like any horse, I mean, we're instead of circling the calendar, we kind of, let the horse dictate which races we're going to go to through how he's training and, how things kind of come up. And, we got very lucky last summer in particular where, we didn't get too affected by the weather, and everything just went perfect. And, he kind of went on that tear throughout the summer. And, so that's just kind of how we handle things. But, when everything was right with him, he was a very nice horse.
7 wins in 13 starts, a couple of placements, over $2 million in earnings. And, I was just talking, in fact, about Fred Hertrick and John Fielding and the Catholic Boy. One of the big stars in a parade, actually, of stars that Fred and John have produced. And we're going to talk a little bit about the homebred that you're going to send out. Before we do that,
they're both wonderful fellows, and you know, on a side note, I mean, one of the benefits to this horse outside of the actual racing part was just the people that put us in contact with, and Mr. Hershwick and Mr. Fielding. You know, they've just been huge supporters, and you know, great guys to get to know through this horse, as well as, you know, getting to know the Claiborne crew a little bit better. You know, we've just been very fortunate to have been surrounded with some top notch people, and you know, Catholic Boy was kind of the catalyst to a lot of that. So you know, that's been a great part of it also.
Well, and when you think about, for you, you know, what it meant and what it means, you know, to have managed a horse like this, and you know, the grade one wins, the kinds of stake victories that, you know, every trainer, when they get into the game, aspired to. I mean, you win a Travers, Jonathan, in fairly short order. I mean, it's, you know, it's not like you've been training as a practice for many years, but, you know, out on your own, you know, managing a string, it came pretty quickly.
No, it did, and you know, we're very blessed that happened, and you know, clearly, you know, you need the horse to get these kind of things done, and then the ownership to be behind you. You know, everything just kind of fell into place. We're very lucky. You know, we've always been very fortunate in the team that we had, and employees, and how much hard work they put into everything. You know, on top of the vets and blacksmiths. So, you know, it really does take a team to get things like this done, and we've been very fortunate with that.
Well, as I suggested before you joined us, undoubtedly the next thing down the road with this horse will be, you know, a chance to look at his yearlings and then ultimately train some of the sons and daughters that are sure to come your way.
That's certainly the hope. I mean, you know, aside from the racing, you know, I don't know if it's my first or second love with the horses, but I really, really enjoy the bloodstock and the commercial market. And, you know, so you know, we're looking forward to, you know, the mares that are going to get to him, and kind of how he gets received out in the commercial marketplace. And like you said, ultimately, when his foals start hitting the ground, what that's going to bring to the table. But, you know, that's a whole nother layer of things that have to go right. And we certainly hope it does for him, but he's going to get all the support in the world. And if he's, you know, capable of replicating himself a couple times, that's all we need to have happen.
I know it's premature, but I'm curious, will you utilize the season that probably available to you?
I'm thinking about it. I mean, certainly if I could find the right mare, if I, you know, had someone that I am kind of close with, maybe even do a full share with the right sort of mare. You know, I don't want to take anything to him that he wouldn't get a good opportunity with. So it all would depend on how things happen. But I certainly have enough faith in him that we'd be willing to back him there, to go there.
Well, minutes literally within, I don't know, how many, 48 hours or give or take, you replace the big horse with a new stake winner. And Zenobia on Sunday, in a what I thought was a fun and interesting group in the Athenia. And first opportunity at Stakes Company in North America, and she was up to the task, say the least.
No, she was. She's a filly that came to us with a resume, and you know, Mr. Strawbridge and his stable have been, you know, great supporters of us the last 2 years. And you know, to send a horse like her to us with the kind of resume that she had in Europe was, you know, very, very gracious of him, and we're very lucky that happened. You know, she came into us in the winter. We gave her plenty of time off through the spring, and then she kind of got ready over the summer when the ground was firm, and it probably wasn't quite to her liking. So we always, you know, thought that if we could have her in top form for the fall, when we could get a little bit of softer ground, you know, we'd be able to really see a true reflection of her. And her training the last 6 weeks gave us a lot enough confidence to tackle Graded Stakes Company, and you know, that all kind of came together with the weather. Johnny's Ride, which I thought was fantastic, you know, riding and you know, the filly doing well. So, you know, it was just a perfect storm of things coming together for us.
She's a 5-year-old, and you know, to get the black type at this time of year, is this a mare that Strawbridge will take out and put into the broodmare band, or have you had that discussion yet?
We'll sit down and have that discussion here shortly, I would assume. She certainly has earned her way into the broodmare band, so if it's this year or next year, I don't know. It'll be up to him. She's a beautiful physical, you know, clearly now she's got some legitimate black type behind her, so she will certainly be an addition. But we'll let, you know, maybe her next start kind of determine which route we go.
You know, you mentioned the opportunity to just to get to know her. When you get a ready-made horse that comes to you, what's the checklist in terms of, you know, getting to know them and understand what kind of a horse you're dealing with?
Trial and error.
Yeah.
I'd like to tell you there's some science to it, but it's a lot of trial and error. I mean, through training, and then clearly you're going to learn the most about a horse when you run them. You know, first time out here, you know, she caught some firm ground, didn't break sharp, and was left a little too much to do, but she ran on and galloped out nicely. Second time out, you know, she was a little more bullish and put herself forward, and we like that style, and it, you know, we thought how she transitioned from this race to the last was going to set us up for a nice effort. But I just a lot of trial and error. Now with the Euros, I think they are a little kind of suspect, kind of at the whim of the weather. You know, you'd like to go over there and buy horses who prefer firm ground and a little more, you know, can handle the heat a little bit more. But sometimes you get these horses that really just start to flourish in the fall. And that's been the case with this filly.
You know, there's a bit of a curiosity factor. In fact, I'll bring it up with Sid Fernando next, with the sire Falco, you know, a son of Pivotal, who have, you know, you see his name now and then, you know, with a Euro that comes over, but you know, he's not going to be necessarily, you know, familiar to everybody. You know, I'm sure part of that is, you know, part of getting, you know, these Europeans is looking at horses from bloodlines you may not, you know, be intimately, you know, familiar with.
No, that's true. I mean, I think unless, you know, and it's really hard to form an opinion of a sire or a bloodline without having, you know, some kind of numbers or numerical equation to, you know, kind of
sure.
Compare them to. I mean, if you train 10, 15 Tappets or 10, 15 Medaglias, or, you know, you've got numbers to kind of lean on, you can form a good opinion. But in this realm, I mean, I just have to kind of treat her as an individual and you know, not so much her bloodlines. But, you know, clearly there is some tremendous sire power, at least pedigrees coming over to the U.S. and the markets opening up internationally. And, I mean, for me, I would certainly welcome any sort of European bloodlines with open arms right now. You know, I think there's a lot of strength there, and they're certainly, you know, dominating a lot on the turf, and turf racing is becoming a lot more relevant and important, which I think is a good thing for our game, because it's, you know, truly an international business. So, especially in the filly front, you know, you're starting to see some turf fillies show up and some, you know, strong dirt performers. So I think it's just a matter of quality over anything else. But, you know, if we can get some more quality over here, I'm certainly all for it. And,
well,
you know, she's an individual, but she's been one of the soundest, most unproblematic horses I've probably had my hands on in a while. So, you know, I don't know if that's a testament to her pedigree or just her as an individual, but she's been very, very hardy to train, very easy to train that way.
Nice. And, you know, I'm just looking actually at the work, just glancing at the work tab, and you didn't bring her, you left her at Belmont for the summer.
I did. It just, you know, we were getting kind of hard ground up at Saratoga. You know, she's a kind of a keen training filly, and you don't have a lot of options to train a kind of on the muscle horse up there the right way. You know, Clare Court looks quaint and bucolic, but I can promise you it is anything but that when you're actually training on it. You know, so we left her down here. And also, like I said, you know, Mr. Strawbird is such a patient, horse-savvy owner that, you know, I talked to him about kind of shutting her down a little bit for the summer, or at least, like, keep her ticking over so we could have her really ready for the fall. And he was very understanding and patient with that. And, you know, thankfully that all paid off. But we didn't want to really use her up too much, so to speak, over the summer.
Yeah, interesting. And that's, you know, part of the things that you have to, you know, some of the decision-making process. You know, not every horse has to come up to Saratoga.
That, you know, none of us really have true control over, and I think that's a good thing. But it's our job to kind of understand those things and, you know, at least position the horses to perform when they're at their best. And like I said, sometimes it's just a matter of the seasons and Mother Nature.
Well, with the addition of a new stake horse, that and Catholic Boy had been among the graded stakes anyway. That had been your big horse and all your graded stake wins. Now a second graded stake winner and some in the making. And also, before we talk about Pythagorean tomorrow, go back to Sunday as well and the debut of the American Pharaoh, the brother of Wedding Toast, Menelik.
He's an interesting horse. He's kind of a growthy horse who probably isn't at his physical peak yet. He's still growing. We thought running three quarters on the turf would be a kind of a gentle introduction to racing. And, you know, he did everything we kind of expected of him. He broke sharp and showed some speed and maybe, you know, ended the last quarter being just a little bit one pace, which might be indicative of the dirt ultimately. But, you know, all in all, we were happy with his unveiling, and he most importantly came out of it well. So, you know, that's another strong group of clients that are, you know, just great horsemen and a real pleasure to deal with. So hopefully we can do a little good with them at some stage.
Well, and I'm curious, too, because, you know, this is a powerhouse lineup of owners with SF and Starlight, Sal Cumin, and Hertrick and Fielding. A $550,000 purchase, and I mentioned Wedding Toast, and of course American Pharaoh, you know, basically getting all kinds of horses. Pretty nice, and obviously an important, you know, an important horse going forward.
No, absolutely. Listen, any time connections like this show a little confidence in you by sending you a horse, it's a real pat on the back, and, you know, we feel privileged to train for people like that. You know, all you can do is hope that the horses turn out to be runners and you can do well for them.
Well, take it from there, from Sunday's debut to the first-time starter. Pythagorean, you did not draw great. A mile and a 16th for the debut. And as I mentioned, Hertrick Fielding, homebred out of Wave Theory, the Smart Strike mare. And this filly, I imagine, was a buyback for them, right? The 310 and...
I'd be dishonest if I told you I knew exactly what happened there, but that would be... probably what happened.
That's when you put the money from the left pocket to the right pocket, and there's a little less when you...
Well, and certainly with a pedigree. No, for sure. Yeah. But with a pedigree like that, I mean, there's certainly... Yeah. Those can be collector item type filly, so there's no reason to give them away.
Well, and what is she, you know, what has she shown you so far? And you know, the fact that you're going long on the turf sort of gives a certain a couple of hints.
Yeah, I mean, she's a really pretty athlete. She's light on her feet. She's a generous training filly, and you know, we feel like her strength is probably putting a little bit of real estate in front of her. And the, you know, the mile and the 16th here at Belmont's kind of a nice introduction. You know, I don't know if we've got her cranked up to win first out. And like you said, we drew a wide post, and we don't want to overreact and send her to kind of save ground. So we'll just play it at the break. And you know, ideally, if she comes running and gallops out well, that and comes out of it well, then I think that's kind of a mission accomplished. So, you know, we're just going to unveil her and hope she shows us in the afternoon what we've been seeing from her in the morning, which is, you know, a really pretty, moving, efficient, you know, distance filly.
Very nice. Well, Jonathan, always it's always emotional when that horse in the first stall gets on the van and says goodbye.
It is. It is. I've been in this a long time. You've got to be careful about getting too emotional. I look at the flip side and just how fortunate we were to have him, and to send him off to stud sound and one piece and with a resume. I mean, sometimes you just gotta, send him on and pat him on the neck and wish him good luck. And that's the case. We were so lucky to have him. I can't think anything but good things. So.
Gotta be delighted, with the success that he authored and your direction, and the next steps are after that is to go find the next one and develop the next one.
That's basically our job, is to try to go and replicate some talent or find some talent. If we get something as nice as him down the road, we'll see, but we certainly hope to. But there's no doubt he'll be a hard one to replace.
Well, you seem well on your way with nice 2-year-olds, and there's plenty of others we could talk about. We'll save it, and I can't thank you enough, Jonathan. Great to check in, and congratulations again on managing a brilliant and highly successful and fascinating career, Belmont Derby Travers Double. We might be waiting a long time for that to happen again.
Well, I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.
Jonathan Thomas the work that he's done and developed the horses he's had his hands on, because, of course, the Bridlewood portion of his responsibilities, he had a hand in so many that getting them started as young horses. And, of course, his time with Todd Pletcher. He's really... and you can just hear in his voice and in his approach, what a polished professional Jonathan Thomas has become. We'll take a break here and come back with Sid Fernando. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, speaking of Midnight Loot, and a little bit of sales coverage. I didn't really tell you much about what went on day two. It's a funny sale because it's just random. Today could be the biggest day, or tomorrow could be the biggest day. Last year, in fact, the last day was the biggest day. So they might have to run in. They're ahead. I mean, the sales are up, but it's really that same template that we keep talking about. The obvious big horses go for big money, and after that, it's kind of hard scrabble. We'll talk to Sid. Get some thoughts from him next at the races.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sormon Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit the mall at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Lisa likes brandy and the way it hits her lips. She's a rock and roll survivor with pendulum hips. She's got deep brown eyes that have seen it all.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into hour two. Jonathan Thomas, terrific 25 minutes or so, talking about Catholic Boy heading to Claiborne. And a couple others that I'm going to bring up with Sid Fernando. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale.